you can't predict the future. Like, nobody knows what the future will be and what it will look like. What you can do, though, is you can indeed ask better questions of it and create a much better understanding of what the possibilities are, which then, of course, allows you to create that future.
Welcome back, friends. This is Future Proof. I'm Bill Sheridan. I'm your host for this ongoing, never-ending conversation about what the hell is happening out there and what we should be doing about it. The answer to both of those questions, by the way, is a lot. There's a lot going on, and there's a lot we need to be doing. So let's roll up our sleeves, shall we? And look, here's what I love about doing this podcast. I love speaking with people who are smarter than me, which, I mean, let's face it, is pretty much everyone. And I'm okay with that. As Confucius said, if you're the smartest person in the room, then you are in the wrong room, right? Surround yourself with smart people and you get smarter by degrees. And this week's person who is smarter than me, way smarter than me, as it turns out, is Pascal Finette. Pascal he's co-founder at Be Radical, which teaches leaders how to create new business models for success, how to positively embrace disruption, how to prepare their people to be future forward and future ready. Sound familiar, folks? A lot of the same themes keep popping up here, right? He is also chair for entrepreneurship and open innovation at Singularity University, which is a global learning and innovation community that uses exponential technologies to tackle some really big challenges. And he's previously held leadership positions at Google and Mozilla and eBay. So yeah, pretty smart guy. And I can't wait to get to our conversation because it was awesome. But first, let me tell you that this week's show is sponsored by the Business Learning Institute, which delivers competency-based curriculum, courses, content, and community to maximize career trajectories and grow intellectual capital for organizational and executive leadership. Hundreds of courses by dozens of instructors and unlimited customization. Find out how the Business Learning Institute can help you by visiting blionline.org. So, back to Pascal Finette. His focus these days is what the future looks like as it pertains to the intersection of business and technology. And that future, it terrifies him and thrills him at the same time. As he told me, he's living this duality between freaking out and being super excited. So here's the freaking out part. For the past 50 years or so, we've generally accepted Moore's Law as a perfect example of exponential change, right? The doubling of computational processing power every 18 to 24 months, Moore's Law. Turns out that's nothing. According to a Silicon Valley research group called OpenAI, the capacity of artificial intelligence is currently doubling every 105 days. Or so, and it's grown by more than 300,000 times since 2012. I'm freaking out just reading that. So how do we become super excited by something like that? The answer, Pascal told me, is by asking better questions. He says you can't predict the future. It's really hard to pinpoint a specific outcome, but what you can do is ask better questions about it and create a much better understanding of what the possibilities are. And one of the key questions to ask is this: what is disruption, really? Pascal says, we're getting disruption wrong. He said that at a National Retail Federation conference recently. He said, disruption is this weird word. Everyone talks about it. Nobody understands it, and everybody's scared by it. End quote. Here's how National Retail Federation managing editor Christina Stewart puts it. She says, quote, three forces drive disruption, Pascal said. First, disruption is never one feature. The smartphone isn't a disruption. It isn't one thing. It's a collection of a lot of things. A glass screen, a new kind of processor, a new kind of battery, an operating system. It's easy to dismiss these things. We only see incremental change when we look at one thing, Pascal said. Second, many existing skills and processes must evolve into something new. Quote, this is the most dangerous part, Finette said, pointing to the car industry as an example. For decades, it was focused on the combustible engine, which has hundreds, if not thousands, of moving parts. Meanwhile, the car of the future has something like 80 moving parts. Finally, disruption is almost always, it almost always reaches the tipping point at the go-to-market stage, when companies use available resources to deliver a unique value proposition to customers. When it was first released, the iPhone wasn't better than the Nokia. It was just packaged differently and was cheaper. There's a customer need line, Finette said, a quality that products need to have to be acceptable to consumers, end quote. So that's where we are. Innovation, Pascal says, makes the same old thing better. Disruption, on the other hand, makes that old thing obsolete. And we're in for a slew of disruption in the years to come. As I said, Pascal is a chair at Singularity University. And as Singularity University co-founder Ray Kurzweil said, we won't experience 100 years of progress in the 21st century. It will be more like 20,000 years of progress. So buckle up, folks. It's going to be a wild ride. And luckily, we've got a great guide this week who's going to help us make some sense of all this chaos. This is a great conversation. Settle in and take a good listen. Take some good notes here. Here is Pascal Finette. Pascal, thanks so much for joining me today. So let's start with this. I want to know a little bit more about you and Radical. So what do you and your team do?
Yeah, it's a good question. Quite frankly, I ask myself that same question every morning. but the short version of it is we have a real keen interest in what does the future look like, particularly as it pertains to the intersection between business and technology. And how do you create businesses and how do you show up as a leader in this new world? And as a backdrop to that, I've spent the last 15 years or so in this industry, either leading innovation departments at some of the more interesting companies like Mozilla and Google, and or, of course, recently having joined Singularity University relatively early in its formative years and teaching this to leaders all around the world.
That's fantastic. And I always like to ask people also, why do you do what you do?
So first of all, it is just really interesting. And I'm a lot of my drive comes from learning. I love learning. I love being surrounded by people who are smarter than I am, where, you know, my learning curve is really steep. That's one side. The other side is both a understanding and a realization that if they don't wake up to what's happening in the future, think about what happens with, you know, artificial intelligence, blockchain, you name it, mm-hmm. That a lot of businesses will fall on hard times. And that shakes me because a lot of the economic activity in, you know, most countries around the world is tied to these businesses. And at the same time, looking at the incredible opportunity this brings. Yeah. So it's kind of like this duality between like freaking out and being super excited.
Right. I think a lot of folks in our profession kind of toggle back and forth between those two things as well. And a lot of it has to do with the words that we've been using, right? These words like change, future, disruption, they've been used to really to death lately. And we all know, I think, what they mean at this point. Less well known, I think, is what we need to do about them. So where do we start in how to deal with these things that are kind of radically changing our world? Does it start with a kind of a change in mindset?
Mm-hmm. I think that's where it begins. It's really like this notion of waking up to what the future will look like, how fast it will come, but also not getting overwhelmed by it and not getting like freaked out by it, but really understanding as like having a clear mind about, okay, so what are the threats and what are the opportunities? Mm-hmm. And by the way, I couldn't agree more with you when you just said, like, you know, we're overusing these words. In one of my keynotes, I talk quite a bit about like disruption and tell people that, you know, disruption for me has become effectively like tofu, which is, if you've ever eaten tofu, it tastes like nothing. And then you put sauce on it and tastes like the sauce. Disruption is a similar thing. And, you know, I keep telling people there's this interesting distinction between innovation and disruption, where innovation is you make the same things better. And there's nothing wrong with it because that's what we do, right? What a lot of our businesses do. And disruption is when you make something new, which makes the old thing obsolete. Mm-hmm. And the challenge with that is that it typically doesn't happen in your field of view. It doesn't happen in your industry, even like directly in your industry, because you typically know what's happening there. Mm-hmm. It happens by, you know, like some kids in a garage coming up with this new thing, which then makes your existing business obsolete.
Mm-hmm. So, and I found this interesting. You have this concept that you call a disruption map exercise, which I think is an incredibly powerful exercise. Can you describe for us how that works?
Yeah, absolutely. And full disclaimer for this, this is actually a tool which futurists have been using for the last 40 years. It goes by many, many different names. We have a specific flavor of it, which we call the disruption map. And the idea is the following. When you look at any potential disruptor, so let's say the influence a technology has on your business, the disruption typically doesn't happen in the direct implications, the first level implications, simply because you can see those. They're clear to you. The exercise effectively allows you to, if you've ever seen a mind map, it looks very similar to a mind map where you put your disruptor in the middle. Let's say for the sake of argument, and it's my favorite example, let's take autonomous vehicles, self-driving cars, mm-hmm. put them in the middle. And you say, what are the direct implications of this? And you can come up with a whole bunch of them, like less people will have accidents on the road because cars drive themselves better. Or you will do other things in the car than drive, very obvious. And then you look at, okay, so once you have this, kind of like your first order implications, you say, what are the implications of that? Mm-hmm. So what is an implication that of less accidents? Well, now you can say insurance rates will change. If you happen to have a car repair shop, you'll probably see less business because, you know, less fender benders. Mm-hmm. And then what's fascinating for us is when you do this exercise, you often find these really interesting, as you branch out, you find these really interesting kind of like white spaces and or real disruptors. Mm-hmm. I give you a very bizarre one, which is, so let's stay in our car exercise. Less accidents lead to less people dying on the road, which is, you know, like we should all celebrate.
Right.
Now, at Singularity, we actually showed this to the Red Cross. And, you know, we were really proud of this. And we were like, oh, this is great. And then the gentleman from the Red Cross looked at this and said, oh, my God, that's terrible. And we're like, what kind of human being are you? And he said, like, no, wait. So you need to understand that if we have less people dying on the road, a consequence of that is that we will have less organ donors. Because most of the organ donors, unfortunately, of course, are people, you know, young people who, you know, get into car accidents and unfortunately pass away on the road.
Of course.
He said, like, that leads to an increased shortage of organ donors. Right? This is such a bizarre thing to think about. And you would not get to that if you just look at self-driving cars. Mm-hmm. But the exercise is very powerful to find these hidden gems of either disruptors and or of course white spaces, opportunities.
Yeah, that's fascinating. I never would have thought of it quite in that way. So when you get down to the root of all this is really about asking better questions, right? I mean, just kind of peeling back the layers until we get to the root of the problem.
Absolutely. And it goes back to, you know, you can't predict the future. Like nobody knows what the future will be and what it will look like. What you can do, though, is you can indeed ask better questions of it and create a much better understanding of what the possibilities are, which then, of course, allows you to create that future.
Yeah, yeah. And I've heard a number of people talk about this notion of asking questions lately and the power in asking better questions. In your mind, what is the power that these questions give to us?
Well, again, I think the old adage was always we seek answers. And I believe that in a world which has stability and predictability, mm-hmm. That's perfectly fine. And I think that was true until, you know, not too far ago. Because the world, if you think about, you know, like Industrial Revolution, even somewhat of the Information Revolution, everything moved relatively slowly. But now we're living in this world which there's a military term called VUCA. VUCA stands for volatility, uncertainty, complexity, and ambiguity. So if you look at this world, we are living in this VUCA world, right? Like where everything is changing, and it's changing so fast that you actually can't seek answers anymore. You need to be much more flexible and be kind of like in this soup. And when you're in the soup, you better are like, the better your questions are, the more pinpointed they are, the more you can understand, like, you know, where you are today and what are the possibilities are from here towards the future. Mm-hmm. Just to give you a short example of like how crazy this world is, and this number blows me away as, you know, as a practitioner in this world. There's a research group in Silicon Valley called OpenAI. It's a fairly large research group co-founded by Microsoft these days. They looked at the computational output, the ability of AI and its development over the last 7 years. So 2012 to beginning of 2019. What they found is that over those 7 years, AI has A, moved on an exponential curve. So it has increased in its ability on an exponential rate. But more importantly, in those 7 years, it has increased in its capacity by 300,000-fold.
Oh my gosh.
And it's currently doubling every 270 days. So less than 1 year for another doubling. So it just gives you an idea of like how fast and how dramatic these changes will be. And again, it's really hard to pinpoint a specific outcome in the future, but you can ask the better questions, which then prepare you.
Yeah. I mean, my God, if things are moving that fast, how do we begin to even hope to wrap our arms around it? I mean, when we're living in the soup, as you said, I mean, is it even possible for us to move and learn and pivot fast enough when these technologies are moving that fast?
Yeah, I think so. Because first of all, just so we're clear, there's a lot of stuff which doesn't move quite as fast, right? Like if you think about humans, if you think about your client relationships, like the way you interact with a client, all that doesn't move, you know, at this weird pace. So that's number one. The second one is if you happen to shift your mindset towards much more of a mindset of agility. I think that's really important. Like that you understand that, you know, like back in the day, you could do a 5-year plan or a 10-year plan even. I think that's largely, you know, it's just not doable anymore. What you can do is you can say, here's the goalpost we have for 5 years. And here's kind of like we, futurists call this the cone of uncertainty. Mm-hmm. The further out you get, the wider the cone becomes, you know, like the positive and the negative or the variance, basically. But you can paint that picture and then can, I think the one of the most important things I find is if you embark on a, let's say you embark on a project and you say, I know it will take me 2 years to get there. You're well suited by figuring out at least roughly what the world will look like in 2 years. So you're building for that world when your project is done or like ready for the market, that it's ready for this 2 year like out. Not if you're building it like with today's knowledge, of course, it's like 2 years old when it arrives.
Right. So if you're a leader of an organization, kind of a legacy organization, let's say, who's feeling a little overwhelmed with all this change and all this disruption and isn't used to working in that way, that more agile, fluid type of way, where do you start? Well, like, what's one thing that we can start doing tomorrow that will have an immediate impact?
Probably two things I have to say there. So one is, at the end of basically every keynote, I've got this one slide where I show a quote from a gentleman called Ron Shaich. Ron was the founder of a Panera Bread, a healthy fast food chain in the US, which he very, very successfully sold to private equity for $7.5 billion, which is you know, pretty nice.
Yeah.
But he said that, you know, I sat down with him and I asked him, like, why were you successful with this? And he said, like, listen, like, We have this mantra at Panera, which was that he said, like, our role has always been and will always be to discover today what matters tomorrow and then transform the company into the future that is unfolding before us, which I find is real poetry in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. Now, the interesting question, and I end my talks typically with that question, is like, how much time did you as a leader actually spend, say, last week deliberately thinking about the future? Mm-hmm. And the answer is mostly zero. And I get it, right? Like the day-to-day is super hard. There's so much like work to be done. But I think we the first step, and this answers your question, like the first step is like carve out a little bit of time out of your busy schedule and really educate yourself about like what's happening in the world. That's what's happening in your industry, what's happening in technology as it pertains to your industry. So I think that's That's one. And then the second one is, this is somewhat unrelated, but it flows into it, which is really adopt a market-driven mindset, a customer-driven mindset. So the question, Clayton Christensen has this question where it's like he talks about the jobs to be done. Mm-hmm. So instead of saying, you know, like, I'm a software maker and I make accounting software, say, what is the job the customer actually wants to have done? And how do I best solve this? And kind of working backwards and then reassessing that question over and over again, like in regular intervals, because mm-hmm. the solution to get to this, the answer might change. Mm-hmm. And it allows you to like have a different frame of mind and then be more open to looking at new opportunities.
That's great. That's some good advice. Now you've been working, have you not, with a group called CPA.com, which is correct. Kind of the technology arm of the AI CPA, mm-hmm. on a program called Navigating the Future. So tell me what that's all about.
Yeah, we have the absolutely incredible honor and pleasure to work with CPA.com and the AI CPA. Where this originated was they invited me to speak at one of their meetings. We had an incredible conversation. I introduced the tool we just talked about, the disruption map, to the group there. And the leadership of CPA.com came to me and said, you know what, we would really like to explore in a longer term relationship, what does the future of the profession look like? And what is your personal view of it? Or like as a group, as you know, as my team, understanding that like, clearly, I don't have the full answer, and you know, like there's so many unknowns for us, of course. But So what we've been doing with CPA.com is two things largely. Is one is we've been educating and informing diverse groups of CPA.com members, clients, etc., on what we see as the future. So we talk about like what's the future of AI look like, what's happening in blockchain, etc. Mm-hmm. And also getting to the mindset shift you just talked about earlier. And then the second one is at the same time, we're trying to educate ourselves about what's happening in the CPA profession per se, so that we can get a better and a more informed view of what do we think. And again, I have no claim that this is truth, yeah, neither with a lowercase or a capital case T. But what do we think, where, you know, like where's the profession going? What are the things we're seeing, which we can probably reflect back to the profession so that the profession can prepare itself better for the future?
Mm-hmm. That's fascinating. I mean, what does, and again, understanding that nobody can see everything or know for certain what's going to happen, but as you think about the future of this profession, what comes to mind for you?
Multiple things. So I think none of this will come as a surprise. I think probably the bigger insight is like how fast it will come or how deep the impact will be. But by and at large, I think a lot of the work, the kind of the rote task of of accounting, for example, will be done by machines. And we start to see this, you know, like you might have heard HR Block partnered up with IBM using their big AI product, Watson, to deploy this towards, you know, the annual tax returns of their customers, et cetera.
Yep.
So we'll see a lot of this, which I think is actually overall is positive for the profession, because as the profession, you can then level up and really work with your client on advising your client and not like sitting there and like punching in data into a spreadsheet or into a software. So I think that's one. The blockchain will in the future, at some point in the future, will have a material impact on the profession, I think, in terms of just the way you keep record, the way you do audit, simply because the properties of the blockchain make it perfect for accounting, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, it is ultimately a ledger. Like that's the starting point, right? So in a lot of ways, it is like the core of accounting is what is the basis of the blockchain technology.
Right.
So I think we will see quite a bit of that. And then the other interesting question for me is, and we discussed this quite a bit with CPA.com clients or members, is what does it actually mean for the clients of the accounting profession? Because they will change pretty dramatically, right? Oh, so absolutely. If you think about, if you take a retailer, you know, like you have this really interesting now relationship where you sell internationally across borders, you probably sell virtual goods, you know, like then the question becomes, where do you actually tax them? Mm-hmm. And it was like huge issues, which even the IRS to a large extent and all other tax authorities around the world are trying to get their heads around, right? Mm-hmm. You add to that things like cryptocurrencies, and the world becomes really complex. Right. So massive opportunity, by the way, I think massive opportunity for the CPA profession, because it requires a lot of leadership there and thought leadership for the profession and the professionals inside of the profession to like step up and say, hey, there's this new world coming, and here's how we're looking at this from an accounting, audit, and tax perspective.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. If you were to be speaking to, say, a young professional new to our profession, or someone still in school, studying accounting, where would you advise them to focus? Given all of that, what kind of skills would you think that they would be smart to pursue?
Yeah, it's a really fascinating question. I think there's an interesting, so I've not gone through a CPA exam, for example, right? So take it with a grain of salt. But I think there's an interesting balance where you need to understand the foundation at the basics, at the at the ground level. Mm-hmm. And I think you want to understand the high level thing, the kind of stuff in the middle, like machines will take over. Mm-hmm. But you need to have the basic understanding, because otherwise you can't actually like extrapolate up to the top where you then really work with your clients on strategy, for example.
Yeah.
So if I were in the profession or entering the profession as a newbie, as a youngbie, I would really focus on getting really solid foundations. You see the same happen in computer science, where the best computer science people I meet, they're really good in their math. Mm-hmm. So they go down and like really study the math and algorithms and so on. And then there's a middle piece in there, which you don't need all that much knowledge anymore, because you just like extrapolate it away, have machines do it, et cetera.
Yep.
And then you focus on the top, where that's where you then create the value for your client.
Yeah, that's really interesting. So there's a futurist that I spoke to a few years ago by the name of Andrew Zolli, who used a phrase that fascinated me. He talked about one reason why businesses or leaders fail is that they fail to notice the weak signals of disruptive change mm-hmm. on the horizon. So I'm just kind of curious, what kind of weak signals of disruptive change have you been seeing lately? What's kind of captured your imagination as being next on the list of things that we need to pay attention to?
So first of all, I 100% agree. I think the weak signals idea and theories is first of all, it's a very solid piece out of the futurist toolkit in terms of determining where the future is going. It's also where we typically get it wrong because we're dismissing it, right? So you look at, say, for example, in your daily life, you look at a voice assistant, like Alexa, Siri, these things. For most of us, they're mostly toys. They're entertaining. They're kind of fun. It's like, it's interesting that you can do it, but like they're not disruptive. Mm-hmm. Now, these things are getting better and better and better. And in 10 years, they will be better than any human in understanding you. And then when that happens, if you run a call center, your call center is gone. Mm. Right? So those are the signals you need to look at. Another good example for me is I was just with an airline executive, and they asked me, what about the airline industry? And the airline industry is growing like crazy, right? Because people are flying more. And that particular airline is a lot in business travel. And I said, have you looked at virtual reality, augmented reality? He's like, yeah, it's a toy, right? It's entertainment. And I said, like, yeah, sure, it's a toy today. Right. But once you get this and it becomes so good that when you put on your goggles, like you really feel like, we're having this conversation now sitting in the same, Parisian cafe, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. Then the question becomes, how many of the business meetings I fly out to New York from San Francisco today do I actually need to fly out to anymore? Mm-hmm. Right? So those are like typically a good indicator for like a weak signal is if you see something where you say, wow, this is interesting, but a lot of people dismiss it or they laugh about it or it's getting like put into a little corner.
Right.
And then
it's kind of like AI and Watson in the beginning when IBM created it specifically to see if they could defeat human beings at games, right? Chess or Jeopardy right. or things like that. And we all kind of thought, oh, that's kind of cute, but what's the big deal for me? And then all of a sudden, here we are.
That's right. Exactly.
What should we be doing now to kind of prepare for that world?
So, a gentleman called Guy Kawasaki, who was the first evangelist at Apple way back when, like 1984, when they introduced the Macintosh, he taught me an interesting question. He said, when you see something, ask yourself, isn't that interesting? Which I find is a really fascinating question because, you know, like you see AI, an AI system, or you see virtual reality, or you see the blockchain, or you see a cryptocurrency. You look at the Bitcoin. The Bitcoin is, in its design, a fairly flawed product, right? It's like energy consumption is crazy. It takes forever for the Bitcoin to actually complete the transaction and so on. So clearly, I'm not very bullish on the Bitcoin, saying like, you know, this is going to change the world. But you look at the Bitcoin and you ask yourself, isn't that interesting? And then you start extrapolating a little bit and you let your like imagination run wild a little bit. And you say, whoa, wait a second. You know, there might be something coming here, which probably replaces, you know, like the euro or the US dollar as like a stable global currency. Mm-hmm. And then you can ask yourself, okay, so what does that mean for like the accounting profession, right? Mm-hmm. So for me, it's like starting out, and this goes full circle to the point you made earlier about asking better questions, you know? Mm-hmm. It's like, isn't that interesting? It's a very powerful question.
It is. And I think, we're probably going to be asking ourselves that a lot going forward here. So Pascal, thanks for taking the time. First of all, thanks for the insights. Great conversation. I really appreciate you being here.
No, thank you so much for having me. This was really great fun.
That was Pascal Finette. Pascal is co-founder at Be Radical, which teaches leaders how to create new business models for success and how to positively embrace disruption and prepare their people to be future forward and future ready. We're all in on that, aren't we? He's also chair for entrepreneurship and open innovation at Singularity University, which is a global learning and innovation community that uses exponential technologies to tackle the world's biggest challenges. You can find out more at beradicalgroup.com. And if you're looking for more on Singularity University, go over to su.org. And if you want to find out more about the disruption map exercise that Pascal mentioned in our conversation, go to YouTube, search for disruption map exercise. It'll pop right up. Good stuff there. Also, if you want to learn more about Pascal's partnership with CPA.com to help firms reimagine the future of practice, head on over to j.mp/CPA Radical. That's j.mp/CPA Radical. And don't forget, this week's sponsor is the Business Learning Institute. The BLI's Future Ready Learning Framework outlines the skills that CPAs need to thrive in the rapidly changing world of accounting and finance. That framework is all about gaining and maintaining deep technical knowledge along with a strategic skill set. And we're talking about strategic aptitudes that have been identified as most crucial for tomorrow's CPAs. Start mastering these future-ready skills now by visiting macpa.org/future-learning. And that is officially all I've got for you for this week. Tune in next week. I will talk to you again then. Stay real, folks.